the Station of the Stars. RTI.
Have mercy, Mr. Attitude. Eric Wiltshire.
Welcome back to part two of Postcard from Pop Brad. Hopefully with Lee staying with us for more than 5 minutes. Mark over there in Paris. And again, million thanks to Gerald for joining us from Galway.
Nice to meet you, Gerald.
It's just a shame you weren't here. Anyway, the first show of Olympic security strength has kicked off as the M6 was closed over a smoking bank.
Well, it's crazy, isn't it? It's not crazy. I don't know how to...
Bag. Yeah. I've got banks on the brain. Lee?
I'm sorry, I'm having difficulty hearing you. Am I being ignored again, or...?
No, you are there. We're just waiting for you to comment.
Oh, right. Well, I was, yeah.
It was a smoking bag. With that kind of emphasis. It was a smoking bag.
Lee?
Yeah?
Speak.
Well, all I was going to say is that... at first, I sort of really objected to what the police and the security services did about this M6 happening. Because it, on the face of it, it is ludicrous that the army, the police, the fire brigade, everybody, secret service, all turned up and closed the M6, which is the second most major motorway in Great Britain, all because somebody had got a pretend cigarette in a bag. But actually, when you get beyond the sort of joke side of it, which I hold my hands up and most of the British press have gone on, you start to realise how intense the security for the Olympics is in the UK today. And I think this was actually... the first show of the kind of security we're going to face. We've had the joke about the missiles on the roofs of skyscrapers in London. We've had this ridiculous M6 thing, apparently. Mm-hmm. But actually, what it shows is that the police, the security forces, are all on the ball. And one way or the other, they're going to stop any kind of terrorism, any kind of action.
Yeah, it's a good show.
It was. Brilliant. And I think it's sad that people have taken the mickey out of them.
Well, I think they're pillocks, then. That's all I can say to them. Because, you know, showing this level of integrated security system working between the fire, the police, the security services, the army, just goes to prove to anybody who's thinking they're going to be stupid, not a good idea.
Well, that's it. And like the arrests, the number of arrests, I know none of them have been linked together, but you've got them in the West Midlands, you've got them in London.
This very morning, 7 men arrested.
7 men, that's right.
Yeah, so I mean...
Or, on the opposite side of the coin, are we overreacting?
Well, I think not, but I have to say that I was going to say something frivolous, to be quite honest, but I've changed my mind. You know, to drive around in a car that had no insurance, knowing that every police car has got a camera on which will tell you you've got no insurance and can stop you, is just ridiculous. And that's what happened.
It is.
No, I don't think you can say that they're overreacting when they open the boot and they found that there's firearms and other offensive weapons.
Yeah. Well, that's right. That's what I'm saying. What Eric says is right. Yeah. You've got somebody pulled up because of no insurance on a car. Yeah. That's an everyday occurrence in Britain. And just because the Olympics are looming, it doesn't mean that everybody who hasn't got insurance has got a bomb in the back of the car.
No, true.
And equally with the cigarette. In fact, the bloke had put a false cigarette in his bag and it had started less off that sort of fume thing.
That's right.
So, again, completely innocent. So
but
it isn't.
There is one key point to all of this. What all the services have said, that there's in no way any form of connection with the Olympics as far as these arrests today as well.
That's right.
Which I think is good. Anyway, moving along, because we've got loads to get through this week, boys and girls. Operation Elvedon is... I can't quite figure out how to describe it in simple words, so excuse me while I do the longer version. It's a whole operation set up about corruption and conspiracy. And the latest news that's come out from the Elvedon operation is a former Mirror journalist was one of three people arrested by police as they investigate corruption payments to public officials.
Yeah.
Funny again, isn't it? Don't we keep doing things with our public officials, eh? What's going on? Don't pick on the journalists anymore. Let's give up on the journalists. Let's let the journalists get on with job. Why don't we look more closely at the corruption and the strangeness and the self-seeking that goes on within our public figures? We've had the greatest evidence against them this week again, and this evidence keeps building and building and building, yet we keep going back to the journalists. But you know what? What the journalists are doing, despite all this trouble that's being foisted upon us because of the peccadilloes of the profession, now we have them exposing corruption at the highest point. There's only one more place we can go to discover corruption. I'm not going to say where that is. But
yeah, Lee, you've got one comment for you on all of this.
Go on.
It takes two to tango. Therefore,
of course it does.
Therefore,
of course it does. And you know what?
What?
The second person's the one who takes the money.
Now, the first person is the other person that's creating the crime.
Well, yeah, you know what? I've paid people for information, and I'm sure there isn't a journalist on this planet who couldn't claim that in some way or other, even if you've just taken somebody out and bought them half a lager, that is basically corruption. But there has never, ever been anything to stop journalists buying information until the checkbook journalism saga of 30 years ago, which I just got on to the end of the tale. I was only 12 when it happened, and I was out working for the Sunday People and doing that. But there has always been corruption. But the corruption within newspapers ultimately, generally, works for the good of the community and for the good of the country, as it is doing now. The corruption of banks and the corruption of politicians can never, ever be said to be working in the favour of the community and the country.
Okay. Tourists got a problem going to Spain this year, and Spain's desperate to get more tourism in. What the government over there has done to balance its books a little bit is they are going to face an extra airport tax.
An amazing thing. What an amazing thing. Why don't they just sell some of those millions and millions of empty houses they've got? Sell them at a few quid. Sell them cheap. Instead of taxing the tourists who are actually going to come over and spend money on them, why don't they just sell off some of these properties? Deal them dead cheap. We'll all go out and buy a few.
Yeah, and interestingly, here we go for you, Mark, for Consumer Action Group.
Yeah.
Ryanair has said it's going to pass the cost on. Why am I not surprised?
Yes, well, I mean, Ryanair has got a pretty rotten reputation, but despite that, people seem to be prepared to overlook their reputation in return for the deals that they get.
Indeed.
Really good deals. You can't... Ryanair have got a checkered reputation. I think it's wrong to say they've got a corrupt reputation. I think they've got a checkered reputation because of the...
I never said they had a corrupt reputation.
No, you didn't.
If you didn't say that, Mark,
rotten.
I apologise.
Rotten was the word used.
Yeah. What was the word used? Sorry.
Rotten.
Rotten. Sorry. My fault, and I apologise profusely. It's just that I can't hear exactly what's being said. I don't think they even have a rotten reputation. I think they have a checkered reputation. And ultimately, the deal they do for flyers is a good deal. You get where you're going cheap. And I went out to Ireland a few months ago. And, it's not the best plane, not the prettiest plane, not the best service, the waitresses, or whatever they're called, the air hostesses, are not the most beautiful. They seem to be growing in age. Mm-hmm. But the service gets you there on time, cheaply.
Well, that's true. Here we go. This is Mark's one. Moody's have downgraded Barclays' credit rating outlook from stable to negative since the resignation of Bob Diamond and crew. Mark?
Yeah. Well, I mean, absolutely right. I mean, quite frankly, they ought to be looking at a load of others and saying they're negative as well. I understand that RBS is probably in the frame for this interest fixing scandal as well. Let's hope they go negative too.
Basically, isn't it?
Of course, one of the problems about negative then simply means that they have got to spend more money in order to borrow money, which means that the prices go up. And of course, who pays at the end? It will be the consumer and the businesses as usual.
Can I have a little gloat?
Yeah, go on, have a gloat.
I'm going to have a little gloat because do you remember last week we mentioned one of the ratings agencies saying we're downgrading everything and the share price went up?
Yes, that's right.
And guess what happened with Barclays?
The share price went up.
Correct.
Yeah.
Can I interrupt again? Because what you're saying, I understand, but we're taking such a soft view of this.
No, we're not, Lee. The fact is...
Last week,
hold on. Yes, we did. Moody's downgraded Barclays. A credit rating agency downgraded something last week. That's 2 weeks in a row. These so-called experts have got it wrong.
Well, the so-called experts have got it wrong quite feasibly. But who got it wrong? You know, we're saying where did the corruption start with the person who handed out the money? Where did the corruption start here with the person who kept the money, which is the banks? Yeah. And the fact that their share prices have gone up.
And you've got to be careful of this. If the law enables them to do something that's morally wrong and yet is legal, it's not corruption.
Well, I don't think the law did permit it. I think they're
that's
fixing
a very new point because yeah. if you listen to the debates that have gone on over the last week, we were probably the first station to say that what had happened was a crime.
Mm.
And now, if you listen to...
Everybody's doing it. Yeah, I know.
And you know why? Because it is a crime.
I'm not disputing it.
And to be saying that Barclays have done well out of this...
Absolutely.
Yeah, but it's no different anywhere else. I'll give you another perfect example. OPEC. The oil producers.
Yeah.
Right? They fix the price of a barrel of oil.
Of course they do. Of course they do. But it's a totally different thing than a bank. A bank is something that has everybody else's money. We have no money. What we have is bits of paper. And the bank has all the money. Right? We take them on trust. We trust that our bits of paper and our little bits of metal that we call coins actually will work for us and actually represent our wealth. And what's happening here is that all the banks, not Barclays now, 20 other banks have been highlighted. And America we're looking at as well. Obviously,
well,
the interesting thing
about Barclays is their roots, which is something I think Barclays have definitely forgotten. Because Barclays it was actually originally a Quaker bank.
Yeah, it was.
And
we're all quaking now about them.
No, and I'm being seriously because the Quaker values would not allow for this sort of thing to carry on. And I think Barclays, along the rest of the other banks, should go back to their original 1880s or whatever it was philosophy and actually be open, transparent and honest with their clients. And then we might have a decent banking system.
Yeah,
but the banking system now has collapsed on all fronts. And we need to start looking, we need to start looking at a new way of financing the world. This isn't like OPEC. OPEC is very important, and it makes a difference to the world.
I'm going to defend some banks now, which is going to hurt you two immensely. But I have to say, they're not English banks. Mm. Because I have dealings with two completely different banks in Slovakia because of the RTI and everything else. And the Tatra Bank and the VUB Bank, which ironically for years was run by an English guy, okay? And John, if you're listening, brilliant bank, VUB. And they have very simple values. We do this for you, you do this for us, and everything's marvellous. And they're very open and honest about it. And, if you go into somewhere like, I took a friend into Tatra Bank, and introduce them. And the girl says at the end of it, have I sold it to you? And that, it was the old-fashioned thing. And yet I've got, which I'm actually checking up on, gentlemen, before we do it, I've got an expat who's currently fighting, it's Lloyds, I think it is, who has an expat account, has yet to receive... Get this, as yet to receive the passcode for the bank card.
Mm.
Now, this account has been going for months. He can't get money out or put money in because he hasn't got the code. And yet the bank are charging him £20 a month for not putting money in and doing the job properly.
And I think
that's a breach of contract. I don't know yet.
I think it's a breach of morality.
Well, that could be that as well. But I'm hoping to have all the information about that next week. And we're going to pass that on to Uncle Mark.
All right.
There you go. Yep. The interesting thing I saw on Facebook this week was a nice picture of a London bus stop. And it says, for the best fixed rates, and underneath it says Barclays.
Barclays.
Yeah.
Spot on, Barclays. At least they finally become honest.
Anyway, this is one for you two gentlemen, and I'm just going to say, well, if nobody wants them, who cares? There's currently a call to save British threatened theatres from being either knocked down, developed, or let to fall to risk to nowhere. Things like the Wilton Music Hall in London, or the Gaiety in Ayr, or even the Morecambe Winter Gardens, which have been closed since 1977, and idiot people are trying to rescue them.
Why do you object to people trying to rescue them?
Because obviously nobody wants them, nobody's going to them, and nobody cares about them. So I know what they're going to do. They're going to apply...
I think that's wrong. I think that is totally wrong.
Have you seen the inside of the Winter Gardens? It's an important piece of architectural history inside. An absolutely wonderful, important piece of theatre history. Mm. What a shame that this kind of thing's being let to go.
Yeah, and what they'll do is they'll go for a lottery grant to restore them, which should go to a hospital instead.
Well, no, I think you can't say that. I think that's a hideous thing to say. Not only do we need health in this society, we need culture too. Yeah. And I refute what you say about people not going to theatres. Theatre is a burgeoning industry in the British way of life now, and we need to protect it. Yeah, you've got plenty of amateur dramatic groups who use the theatres, but you've also got touring shows. An old friend of mine, Katrina, out of Katrina of the Waves, is currently touring with a theatre show around the UK. What a fabulous thing. And if we can finance keeping, like Mark says, these architecturally stunning, absolutely fabulous buildings, and create something that gives art and culture and charm and emotion to this bombastic, bigoted society that we live in, then it's only a good thing.
It's Formula One this weekend, boys and girls. There is some entertainment on the television. but I've got a challenge for you two. Got a challenge. Are you ready?
Go on.
Yeah.
Could you please find out for me who pays for, who funds the Theatres Trust? Because apparently there's a trust that looks after theatres, and I'd love to know who funds it. And if any
What's that got to do with Formula One?
Well, because Formula One has to pay for itself. If it's government money...
Oh, wow!
If it's government money, or any other pot that they take money out of from the state, I shall be very annoyed, because it shouldn't come out of the state money. Complaints about cold calling and spam text messages soared. The BBC actually had a programme, the topical programme called Panorama, that was covering it this week, which you'll be able to see on BBC World News, I think, if I remember rightly.
May I say, ladies and gentlemen, don't watch it. It was rubbish.
That's what everybody's saying.
It was rubbish.
Go on, why?
Well, when you think... The actual reason I think it's rubbish is because journalistically it was a complete waste of time. It did absolutely nothing. It didn't really expose anything. Mm. What we need to talk about is the fact that how many calls a day are people getting? Like, I had 19 calls yesterday off cold calling centres. 19 calls all the way through the day. And, you know, the last one I had actually it was this morning, just before I completely couldn't get on the show or do anything other than just vegetate in my sweating lounge, was from a company who phoned me up and said, "Hi, Lee." I said, "Who's that?" Because it sounded like a friend, and I don't have many, so usually I recognise them. He said, "Hi, Lee." I said, "Who's that?" He said, "It's James. How are you doing?" I said, "I'm doing well, mate." And I'm thundering through my mind to try and find somebody I know by the name of James. I said, "Where are you calling from, mate?" And he says, "I'm calling from..." I won't name the firm yet, because I think we shall expose them at some point. Mm. Which were an insurance brokerage.
Mm. I'll give you a couple of tips. If it's double glazing that they're selling you, say your house is rented, because they'll put the phone down. If it's insurance, like car insurance, say I don't drive, they'll put the phone down. And any other thing that they come up with, try and find a reason that you can't be held liable for the call, not liable in the legal sense, but where they just won't bother. And I tell you, I used many, many, many years ago, I was living in Bedfordshire, and my company moved everything around, and they said, look, can you be an experiment for us, stupid move, and be a home worker for the company, which was all part of the big Gallagher cigarette company. So I went, yeah, okay. And so they took over the phone line, and in the phone book, my line at home was actually the name of the company and not my surname. So people would phone up and go, is Mr. Mayfair there, please? And I go, no. And they go, is he going to be available? And I would put them in. We had a shoe cupboard sort of thing there. And I'd just put the handset in the shoe cupboard and walk away. Come back when I wanted to get round to it later on, because it's always in the evenings. And,
oh, that's right. And just tell them your dog's died. That's what I do. No, sorry, I'm so glad you rang. Well, yeah, could I just add a serious point on this? This James who phoned me, I asked him, I said, what's your last name, James? He said, I'm sorry, I can't tell you. It's Data Protection.
Marvellous. Anyway.
Can I just give you another one as well? Because no, these are real-life issues.
I want to do something very important. I think one of the things that people should do is now start to hound the relevant bodies that are supposed to do the sorting for you. And there are ones online. The Data Marketing Association as well will pick up on it because they're getting hammered. And I do know people in direct marketing who actually do the job properly and get really annoyed when cowboys come in and short-circuit everything. What every citizen's got to do is hound the regulators and the bodies that cover this. So there's so many calls in, they have to get off their blinking fat backsides and do something about it.
Can we just do a real-life issue on this?
Yeah.
Go on, then.
Well, it's again, I'm not going to name the people in this because I'm going to chase it up and see where we end up, and I actually think this feasibly is a fraud. But we received a letter this morning. You know, they knock on your door, they phone you up, and they send you letters. And it says, I'll read you verbatim what it says for the first paragraph because that's what's important. We've been asked to write to you regarding the loan application you made for £10,000, which we have been informed is likely to have included payment protection insurance in the region of £3,000, which we can get back for you. Now, this company, as I say, I've got the details here, I've phoned them. They charge you, I think it's 5p a minute to call. When I phoned them, they said there is currently a delay of 27 minutes, which costs you whatever it is. And this company, we've never had a £10,000 loan.
No, Lee, but this is a long-standing scam.
It's a massive scam.
But the problem is we're
getting scammed from every direction. We're getting scammed on the phone, at the door, in letters. Britain is being scammed. This is a nation of nothing but scammers.
I know what you mean. Exactly. Let's move on to another indirect scammer. A cafe owner faces losing her home and business after no-win fee lawyers rack up £33,000 in legal bills fighting a £2,000 compensation claim because the gas man cometh and slipped over in her cafe. And this grandmother is seriously going to lose her house and the business because this whole ethos of no win, no fee lawyers, there's got to be something somebody can do about it, Lee.
Can I give you a real-life example of this as well?
You got 30 seconds.
We have a fight going on. The bill was going to cost us £100,000 to fight it. So we went to a no-fee, no-win place. No problem with it at all. They were willing to take it on until it suddenly clicked in my head, well, if we lose, who's going to pay the opposition?
Absolutely.
That's what they never explain.
Exactly, okay? Mark. Exactly, yes.
You lose, and who's going to pay all the costs? They don't tell you about this. It is occasionally possible to get an insurance, but the company, the firm that's representing you on the no quid, no fee, you've got to ask them, is there an insurance place to do it? If you have a particularly strong case, in other words, you're not likely to lose at all, for an extra payment, you can invoke an insurance, okay? But, of course, that's a scam as well because it's almost an unlosable case. Yeah. But if you get a case that is a serious case, but, you know, there is a chance that you're going to lose and the insurance company think it's not worth insuring, then believe me, if you lose, you're going to be in very, very serious trouble.
This is basically what happened to this woman. That's all.
There you go. Go complain. Angry parents allegedly are blasting BBC Sue Barker for blowing up the Go Compare opera singer. Now, if you're outside of the UK, do yourself a favour. It's hysterically funny. There's an insurance company or price comparison website called Go Compare in the UK. And this opera singer has become the bane of every joke, of everything in the UK. And everybody loves to hate him. And it's a brilliant marketing campaign. However, in the latest advert, the BBC presenter, former tennis star Sue Barker, blows him up with his huge sort of like
bazooka she did thing. It with her bazookas.
Huge bazookas.
And people have complained.
Unbelievable. Go compare. Go compare.
Stop it, stop it, stop it. They're not getting any free adverts.
he's just been paid for doing that smash online.
Yeah, yeah, probably. Anyway, all I want to do is ask the question. Has Britain completely lost one of the great things it had in life, which was being able to laugh at itself?
Lampoonery is the basis of British humour. Yeah. And we are not allowed to lampoon anybody in this world except ourselves. And you could probably get arrested for that as well.
Yeah, well, it was quite interesting because there's been a whole range of different headlines in the newspaper. But I'll go to the People's Choice here at the moment and go to what the YouTube viewers said. The messages are quite simple. First one, gotcha. Second one, nice shot. Followed by, give that lady £65,279 and a Blue Beater badge. Followed by, thank you, Sue Barker. And because the man didn't actually die, it says, thanks for trying.
Why anyway. Not? I'll give you a tenner to shoot him.
Yeah. And then on the Daily Mail website, wow, these self-appointed moral crusaders are really something, aren't they? Arrogantly believing that they are qualified to speak for everyone else and attempting to change things as they see fit. And I really.
But it's also a bit of controversy, isn't it, over nothing?
Well, yeah. If you think about it, boys and girls, Go Compare have had how many mentions in the last 2 or 3 minutes?
Absolutely.
So they've done all right, and they've been on every national TV news break, radio break. The guys at the PR firm for said company must be laughing all the way to the bank because they're getting all this free publicity.
So go and compare that.
I think it's brilliant. I think it's really good. And Sue Barker obviously knew exactly what she was doing. She's been around long enough. She knows that it was offensive. It's brilliant. And it's one of that actually is lampoonery taken to a different extent, because we're now actually lampooning the stupidity of the British public who complain about the things that lampoon things.
Did you work that one out? Because I got lost halfway through all that lot. Anyway, we're going to take our leave, boys and girls. That's the end of Postcard from Pop Brand. Hopefully Lee will be oh my God, did you hear that?
What?
That was the thunderstorm clap above my head. I think it's time to go. Say goodbye, gentlemen.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And we'll see you same time, same channel next week, hopefully with no thunderstorm. See you soon. Bye-bye.
From the heart of the earth to the world, RTI.